It's the Debatable.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM 103.7. The strategic position of Turkey plays a highly prominent role in shaping its very own foreign policy. The Republic of Turkey physically connects Europe with the Middle East, and thus Turkey is presented with the potential of serving as an important bridge between the West and the East. This instantly motivates Turkey to renew its interest in ensuring the continued security of the region in a bid to safeguard strategic Turkish interests. I'm Hilary Bruffa, and I'll be your host for the next half hour. On today's show of It's Debatable, we shall be inquiring about Turkish foreign policy. Remember, you can join our conversation with your questions and comments by sending an email on info@mirsa.org.mt or by logging on our online forum on mirsa.org.mt. Present in the studios are our three guests for today. Our academic contributor, Dr. Isabel Kaleya, who is the head of the Department of International Relations, and my other two guests, who are second-year international relations students, Görkem Dirik and Darren Ketkuti. I welcome you all to It's Debatable.
Thank you, Hilary.
Thank you.
Dr. Kaleya, let me start with you and invite you to explain the facts for us.
Thank you, Hilary. EU integration from its inception has been wrought with controversy. Debates over the type of union envisaged culminated in a group of six countries in 1958 setting up the EC, based on the principles of a customs union, but organized around a new hybrid system, neither an international organization nor a federation, but lying in the murky waters of what was later to be referred to as supranationalism, that is, above the states and yet answerable to them. However, the success of the EC has acted like a magnet in the region. In 2011, the number of states are 27, and further enlargement is in the pipeline. Each enlargement has been accompanied by a certain amount of conflict and tension, and accession is a lengthy and complex process where there is mutual adaptation and accommodation. The first enlargement involved a power struggle between the UK and France, spearheaded by de Gaulle, who saw UK membership as allowing in a Trojan horse, whose primary interest was the continued special transatlantic relationship. The second enlargement in the 1980s that brought in the southern European states entailed an overhaul of the EU. The most recent enlargement of 2004-2007 has stretched the capabilities of the Union to its limits, as it incorporated Central and East European states, recently completing the double transition to capitalist economies and liberal democracies. However, undoubtedly, one of the biggest challenges facing the Union today is that of Turkish membership. Turkey expressed an interest to be linked with the EEC as far back as 1959. In 1963, it signed an association agreement and formally sought membership in 1987. However, the European Commission advised against it. Tan Suçila, the then Prime Minister, negotiated a customs union with the EU that took effect in 1996, securing unfettered access to the European single market. Finally, in 1999, European leaders declared that Turkey is a candidate state destined to join the union, and membership talks actually opened in October 2005. In order to fulfill membership requirements and the Copenhagen criteria, the Turkish government has overhauled its political and legal system and worked on its human rights record. Nevertheless, 6 years later, the EU talks are barely moving. Of the 35 chapters into which the talks are divided, as many as 18 are blocked by either the EU as a whole or by Cyprus or by France. Mrs. Merkel, the German Prime Minister, has long opposed Turkish EU membership. Mr. Sarkozy, the French President, has constantly opposed Turkish entry on principle. Public opinion in Austria, the Netherlands and some other countries have become more hostile. Three things have made matters worse for Turkey's EU aspirations. The first is Cyprus. The second is domestic political upheaval as the secular establishment and the military battle against the AK government. And the third is the economic crisis that began in 2008 and hit Europe hard. Recession and rising unemployment has put paid to more thoughts of further EU enlargement.
Thank you for joining us for that introduction, Dr. Kaleya. Now let us continue with our debate on foreign policy of Turkey. Darren, when examining the foreign relations of the Republic of Turkey and the gradual changes that occurred in the Turkish external course of action, it's imperative to keep in mind the geographical and socio-economic factors which condition Turkish foreign policy. Moreover, Turkey can be considered as split between European and Islamic identities. What do you think of this?
Thank you, Hilary. First of all, I highly agree with what you said in the introduction about the strategic position of Turkey, which plays a prominent role in shaping its own foreign policy. Regarding your second remark, yes, although the country is predominantly Muslim, it is highly secular and there exists a democratic system of governance. And this provides an attractive situation which encourages both Europe and the United States to take continued interest in Turkey, which ultimately has encouraged the Turks to adopt an increasingly inherent foreign policy, and they are strengthening their presence in the international scenario.
Well, Turkish foreign policy also has to be considered vis-a-vis eastern borders. The Turkish relations with Iraq, the Kurds, and the repercussions on Turkish-US relations should all be considered, I think. And what do you think of this?
Yes, I think that when we're speaking about Turkish foreign policy, it is very important to take into account the problems which Turkey has in its eastern borders. And first of all, it is important to keep in mind that Turkey has been having problems with its border with Iraq ever since the foundation of the Turkish Republic. It is important to consider the fact that Turkey had objected strongly to one of the provisions of the Treaty of Lausanne, which had awarded the oil-producing cities of Mosul and Kirkuk to Iraq. This is because Turkey has negligible petroleum resources of its own, and the rest of the Middle East countries have built an entire economy on oil production, and this has led to a strain over Turkish and Iraqi relations over time, and because the Turks have widely kept their claims for these oil-producing cities alive.
Don't you feel that the eastern border also poses security threats to the Republic of Turkey?
Yes, that is very right. In fact, over the last 15 years, Turkey has undergone huge internal struggles to fight off the Kurdish insurgency within its own territory. And for such reasons, Turkey opposes any kind of autonomy for the Turks in northern Iraq. And for fear that this might prompt the Turkish Kurds to resume their own claims for autonomy, and that would lead to domestic crisis within the Republic of Turkey. Therefore, this demonstrates how internal domestic struggles are widely taken into consideration by the Republic of Turkey when implementing its foreign relations, and how ultimately they have committed Turkey to take hard approaches vis-à-vis its eastern borders at certain episodes.
Okay, thank you, Darren. On the other hand, Gorkem, what's your view? Do you feel that Turkey can be considered an eastern stronghold or more of a western country?
Thank you, Hilary. First of all, I would like to say that I'm completely agree with my colleague. However, I would like to add some important points. We need, in order to understand the general situation that Turkey has today, we need to understand the historical background that Turkey had before. As we all know, Turkey had been the longest standing candidate for EU membership, much longer than the States, who joined in 2004. Although there have been long debates on Turkish application to the European Union, we have the common opinion that Turkish accession into the Union has both its negative and positive effects. Especially after the end of the First World War and the collapse of the Ottoman Empire with the defeat of the Sultan, the radicals led by Mustafa Kemal started to set about the process of westernizing and modernizing Turkey. However, it takes a lot of time for a country to change its historical image, and that is the situation that Turkey has in these days. In constructivist terms, it was about strengthening and the contested identity of Turkey as a Western European nation rather than an Eastern Muslim nation.
Okay, thank you, Gorkem. Do you feel that Turkey has been forced to stay out of the Western world, or do you feel that it's being increasingly included?
Unfortunately, it is. If you look at historical processes, especially after the Turkish application to the European Union, Turkish membership has been blocked by several reasons and by several states. However, especially during the Cold War, Turkey had played an important strategic role for the West by standing on the cusp of the communist world. Joining NATO, Turkey's importance was improved in terms of strengthening the democratic forces that favored a Western and capitalist orientation for the state. Turkey still faces a number of hurdles which need to be surpassed in a bid to achieve full integration, as most of the existing member states are obviously or clandestinely against the Turks' accession to the European Union. And, more importantly, for instance, Germany had championed the Czech Republic, Hungary and Poland. Denmark supported Sweden and Finland once they became members, and France championed Romania because of several cultural, political, historical and economic reasons. In other words, Turkey had never received external support from a European country, and as a result, the Turks have been isolated from the Western society.
Thank you, Görkem. Darren, the words external used by Görkem are bringing to mind the second US invasion of Iraq carried out in 2003, when the US requested to deploy a division of their troops to stage an invasion of Iraq from Turkey. Can you comment on this?
Yes, in fact, I would like to add that this second invasion of Iraq from Turkey, which was proposed by the United States, was against an exchange of a $6 billion grant and a $24 billion of concessionary loans from the US to Turkey. And the Turkish military, on one hand, was keen to concede and in addition wanted to send Turkish troops to Iraq to keep the Kurds in check in northern Iraq. However, the Turkish parliament refused to authorize either of the two and decided to adhere to the United Nations position on the invasion of Iraq.
As I recall, gradually Turkey realized this was a fatal decision, was it not?
Yes, it was, and I agree with you. It had lost considerable financial aid, inclusion in shaping the future of Iraq, and the goodwill of its primary Western ally, which is the United States. Eventually, Turkey would grant the United States permission to make use of the NATO base in Sirlik to bomb northern Iraq. However, the financial aid which was eventually granted by the United States was much lower than promised at the beginning. What we learn from this episode is that Turkey failed to enforce its say in determining the future of the region, and more importantly, the US had lost some of its faith in a collaborative Turkey. Turkish-US relations would still remain cordial after this incident, but not as strong as they used to be before, which is significantly a challenge for Turkey, since the United States is considered to be one of its strongest supporters from the Western sphere.
Thank you for that, Darren, and thank you too, Görkem, for your input so far. Keep listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM. Coming up is our special guest for today, Dr. Adrian Vassallon, and we shall be asking him for his input on the subject. Campus FM. You're listening to It's Debatable on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Hilary Briffa, your host for today's show. Today we're discussing Turkish foreign policy. Joining us now is our special guest, Member of Parliament Adrian Vassallo. I'd like to invite our debaters for today, Darren Ketkuti and Görkem Dirik, to ask him a number of questions relating to the topic which we're discussing today.
I thank you very much for joining our debate, Dr. Adrian
Vassallo.
It's our pleasure. First of all, I would like to start by asking you whether you do support or not the Turkish candidacy to join the European Union at this stage.
I don't see any reason why. I mean, Europe shouldn't actually. I mean, Turkey is a European country. It's very strategically placed. It's also been a member of NATO, of which obviously many European countries have been members since the inception of NATO. There may be some tiny little problems, you know, that need to be sorted out, but there shouldn't be any problems that should keep Turkey out. But I think it's very important that it does, yes, join.
I noticed that you are mentioning the problems which might arise in the negotiations. For a fact, we know that usually negotiation processes with candidate countries take on for a very long time. And this has been the case with Turkey's candidacy. Do you believe that sort of there are major stumbling blocks which block Turkey's accession into the European Union?
I think that's probably the biggest problem, but it appears there's been some movement has appeared to have happened already. It's the problem of Cyprus, you know, the northern part of Cyprus that is let's put it this way, recognized only as an independent country by Turkey. But I think that can be resolved. Actually, discussions between the north of Cyprus and the southern part are taking place. So I think that progress is moving forward. As regards democracy, I don't think there should be any problems. The death penalty has now been, as far as I'm aware, one of the stumbling blocks, but it has been removed. So I don't think there should be any major problems.
I would like to deliver one more question, please. Do you think that if Turkey, in the next future, of course, will become a member of the European Union, do you think that religiously, culturally, and socially, Turkey and Turkish people will be able to integrate with the European culture, European countries?
Actually, Europe is full of people of different religions, particularly Muslim religions as well. Now, for example, France has the biggest population. They may not have integrated, but obviously they are coming from countries that aren't as secular as Turkey has been. So I think that religion as such, I mean, considering the Turkish people, I mean, it won't cause any problems. I mean, here in Malta, we have many Turks who are living here and they're working here, and they haven't caused any problems, I mean, religiously speaking.
Thank you for your input. That was Adrian Vassallo. We hope to speak to you again some other time when it's debatable. Let's now return to our debate. Darren, we've known for a while that Turkey has limited resources of its own. It has pipelines from other sources which crisscross across the country and eventually reach world markets. I'd like to ask how this impacts Turkish foreign policy.
It did impact on Turkish foreign policy. In fact, I can say that in 1997, a Western consortium of oil companies started to discuss the possible exploitation of the resources in the Caspian region, which holds some 16 billion barrels of oil. And there existed other options rather than investing in a pipeline system which cuts through Turkey, either to update the pipeline system which cuts through Russia, or as build a pipeline across Iran. However, the United States pressured this Western consortium not to reward the Russian state that had been a long time strategic rival of the United States, or else the mullah of Iran. And this brings out the important qualities of Turkey, which is a sound democratic country within the region, as it proved to be attractive for the West to invest in it. And it is estimated that Turkey today earns a revenue of 1.5 million in transit fees per year for this project. Also, throughout the late 1990s, Turkey also signed a string of agreements with Turkmenistan, Russia, and Iran to build natural gas pipelines in a bid to supply the country's own domestic needs. Now, it is estimated that if Turkey fulfills the agreements with the three countries, Turkey would have a surplus of natural gas flowing through the country. And ultimately, this means that Turkey would have the potential to become a major exporter of natural gas to Europe, which would enhance its economic and political powers within the Western sphere. And this demonstrates how the political economy of Turkey has the ability to consolidate Turkish foreign affairs within the region.
Okay, thank you, Darren. You brought up the Western world. Gürkan, I'd like to turn to you and ask if you could tell us a bit about Turkey's relations with the EU member states.
Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that Turkey is not a member of the European Union, it has strong political, social and economic relations with almost all the EU members. But here's the question more about political relations. As we all know, one of the most critical relations that Turkey has with Greece, it was actually dramatically improved by 1999, when it was a mutual process in which both sides decided to abandon their historical rivalry because of the fact that Turkey needed Greek support in order to become a European Union, member of the European Union. Well, in trying to gain membership of the European Union and European single currency, the Greek government was struggling to cut its budget deficit, and the relaxation of tensions with Turkey offered the prospect of significant savings on defense expenditure. As a result, Athens officially declared that Turkey's EU integration is welcome, given that by getting closer to the club, Ankara needs to respect its rules. So, as we can see, it was a conditional support from the Greek side. And moreover, another important obstacle ahead Turkey, as we all know, is the Cyprus dispute, which has not been solved for ages. The conflict still remains unresolved, and Cyprus is a decisive factor in the negotiation process. Cyprus demands official recognition by Turkey and access to Turkish harbors and airports. Turkey demands the isolation of northern Cyprus be brought to an end, and emphasizes that it was the Greek side of the island that rejected the United Nations plan, namely Kofi Annan's plan in 2004. Consequently, as it can be seen, Turkey is already essentially part of the European Union sphere of values, law, policies and global interests. In and around Europe, Turkey is also the model, only model of a big emerging market, industrial economy, information society and democracy, which does not rely on a reserve of natural resources such as oil or natural gas, as we've been seeing in North Africa and some Arab states. All in all, it is obvious that the EU will be globally stronger in enlarging to Turkey, considering the fact that there is a mutual dependency. Turkey needs European Union, European Union needs Turkey in order to more control in Middle East and North Africa.
Thank you, Görkem. And whilst we're still on the topic of the EU, I was wondering whether you think that Turkey can religiously, culturally and socially integrate within the EU?
This is the most significant question that been asking by political scientists and politicians by themselves. Well, since the EU identifies itself as a cultural and religious pastiche that recognizes and respects diversity, supporters of Turkey's European Union believe that as long as both Turkey and the EU member states maintain this common vision, cultural and religious differences should be irrelevant. But as we all know, there is the problem of Turkish people in most of the European countries, which have created their own subculture, especially in Germany, in the Netherlands, in France, and this concerns one of the biggest states in Europe, that Turkey cannot be integrated with the European culture. Moreover, I would like to add that continuing opposition to Turkey's membership of the European Union emerged in particular France, and this explains the reason why France has been opposing the Turkish membership to the European Union, because in France there is the Turkish community who created its own subculture. And this concerns the European politicians a lot. For instance, while chairing the Convention on the Future of Europe, Valéry Giscard publicly expressed the opinion that Turkey's mission would mark the end of Europe, which shows big opposition towards Turkey. And also his public remarks expressed what many others said in private. Turkey's geographical position between the EU and the Middle East, bordering with Iran, Iraq and Syria, gives her an unique strategic importance from my point of view. Moreover, it had a majority of Muslims among its population at the time when the EU was increasingly being accused of a bias against Muslims. A stable and Western-oriented Turkey was therefore an important strategic goal for the West and the best way of ensuring stability in the region. And Western orientation of Turkey was admitted to the European Union. Also, Turkey is a big opportunity for the European Union to prove that the European Union is not made up of Christian norms, but a Muslim country can also achieve full integration into the Union. Consequently, as it can be seen, ranges of argument vis-à-vis Turkish membership prevail within the European Union. One is that Turkey is not culturally European. Another is that it will cause a wave of Turkish immigrants. Thirdly, skepticism over the widening of the European Union to include Turkey that would prevent further deepening of a political and economic union. Turkey is too big and will therefore exercise too much power within the European Union. There are numerous positive facts that must be taken into consideration, such as Turkey's young and increasingly well-educated population that can help the European Union to come to terms with the problems posed by its aging population. For Turkey, this would be a further step in its journey of modernization, the same principle upon which the Turkish Republic is founded. Membership in the European Union single market is a big incentive, as well as the freedom to travel or work in other countries without applying for a visa. In other words, Turkey needs the European Union, and the European Union needs Turkey in order to fulfill its duty.
Okay, thank you for that, Görkem. Let's go back to you now, Darren. We know that between 2010 and 2011, we had what could be called the rise of a new era in Turkish diplomacy. As throughout 2010, the international community witnessed the emergence of Turkey as a prominent player in the Middle East region. Its geostrategic position had long presented Turkey with the possibility of becoming the bridge between the West and the East. So what can you say on these lines, Darren?
I agree with what you're saying, and I also agree with my colleague here was saying that both the EU and Turkey need each other. And specifically, we witnessed this throughout the important regional diplomatic missions which Turkey is undertaking right now. All started in 2009. Turkish started showing signs of growing rapprochement with Armenia as both governments agreed to normalize the relations with each other. Throughout the talks, Turkey made it quite clear that it would open up its borders with Armenia depending on the registered progress in resolving the long-standing dispute which Armenia has with Azerbaijan. And this demonstrates that Turkey attempts to exert its influence upon the rest of the region as it tries to build a string of alliances, in this case with Azerbaijan, to obtain regional supremacy. In May 2009, we also had a diplomatic crisis when the once friendly relations with Israel came under severe strain following the Israeli raid on a Turkish flotilla which attempted to reach Gaza. And basically, both Israel and Turkey drew their reports on the crisis, and the reports deferred, and this put more pressure on their relations. And now Turkey is demanding an apology and compensation from Israel in order to restore diplomatic ties, and Israel is refusing to comply. In 2010, also, Turkey committed itself to resolve some of the long-standing and toughest issues in the Middle East, and one of them is the Iranian crisis. In January 2011, in fact, Turkey started to host talks between the major world powers and Iran, and it is aiming to unblock the stalemate which exists over Iran's nuclear program. The choice of Istanbul to host these talks demonstrates how Turkey has managed to emerge as a significant player in the Middle East, and it has the ability to coordinate between all the factions in the regions. However, it is also important to note that this heavy involvement of Turkey into the Middle East also highlights the limitations of Turkish influence. The fact that Turkey is hosting the talks between the world powers and Iran, and it does not get a seat to participate and shape in the talks. Throughout 2010, also, Turkey committed itself to focus on the reconciliation of the various Afghan groups, which is a long-standing item on the agenda of the international community. And in fact, there have been proposals that the Taliban would set up an office in Turkey. And this proposal has also been welcomed by Karzai himself. And ultimately, this demonstrates that the strength of Turkey lies in the fact that it has maintained a secular democracy in a Muslim-majority country, which has experienced rapid economic growth, and this in turn provided vested interests in the region, and it has empowered Turkey to set establishing a regional presence due to its ability to talk to everyone.
I see. Thank you for that. Thank you to both of you, Darren and Görkem, for joining us today. We hope to see you again in our future shows. Today we're discussing Turkish foreign policy on It's Debatable. Remember, you can join our debate by posting your questions and comments on our online forum on mirsa.org.mt. It's Debatable is a conjoint initiative between the Department of International Relations and MIRSA. A special thank you goes to Dr. Isabel Kalleja, head of the International Relations Department, our guest Adrian Vassallo, and Ms. Joyce Gregg for their input. I'm Hilary Briffa, and I thank you, our dear listeners, for joining us today. Stay tuned to Campus FM.